Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Angie Ngo. Happy Thanksgiving. Coming up bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Dr. Knowledge, the author of the all-time book of Fascinating Facts. Right now, we are talking with Joseph Kruhill. He's a historian for the public. He's also known as Professor Buzzkill. You can find out more about him at professorbuzzkill.com. He's also host of a podcast with the same name, correct?
The Professor Buzzkill History Podcast, yeah.
Professor Buzzkill History Podcast. Professor, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's a great place to be. I love the studios. It's kind of like the Nakatomi Building and a little bit outside, you know, the Nakatomi Building from Die Hard.
So yes.
It has that holiday feel.
A little on the festive side. Hopefully nobody gets shot up. We don't blow
exactly,
up the roof.
Exactly. Apart from that, it's
nothing it's gets thrown out a window onto a cop car. That would be nice.
Yeah, but it's a nice building. Very modern. I've been in some pretty old-fashioned and run-down studios, including my own. The Buzzkill Bunker is not nearly as fancy as this.
Not quite, huh? No. So the Professor Buzzkill.
Right.
How did that come about?
Well, my students, when I was teaching college for centuries and centuries, used to call me Professor Buzzkill. They'd come in with these stories ripped from the internet. This is sort of when the internet was still kind of new. And they'd say, oh, listen to this thing about Churchill, or listen to this thing. I'd say, well, you know, no, that's not true. And they'd come in and ask me about cocaine and Coca-Cola, and I'd say, no, that's a myth. And ask all sorts of questions. Was J. Edgar Hoover a cross-dresser? And I'd always bust these myths because, you know, we knew, historians know this kind of stuff. And so
was he really not a cross-dresser?
There's no evidence that he was at all.
So. Oh, so you can't prove that he wasn't?
Well, no, but I can't prove that monkeys don't fly out my, you know what.
So you go ahead and you ruin all these wonderful things that these college kids were imagining to be true.
And they thought, so they started calling me Professor Buzzkill behind my back, of course. And then I found out
they didn't want to fail.
I found out one day and couldn't stop laughing. So when I decided I wanted to get into media, you know, which is a hell of a lot more fun, I just thought, well, the best thing to do would be do a Professor Buzzkill show and bust these myths. So we've been going for 7 years. We're in 134 countries, something 1.7 million listeners. So we're really very, very happy. I say we. It's mostly me. I interview other history professors and experts, but... It's very much a homemade project, but my marketing people insist I make it sound like we have a whole team.
Now, is there a bit of satisfaction that comes with the idea of kind of setting the record straight and clearing things up? And I'm guessing with the way things are viewed in America today, mm-hmm. where there's just so much uncertainty about what really is.
Yes, there is a very big satisfaction of that and about that, and. One of the things we like to do with the show is when we bust a myth, like the J. Edgar Hoover myth, right? Mm-hmm. There's no evidence he was a cross-dresser. That only takes 30 seconds, right? But then we go on and say, okay, well then how and why did J. Edgar Hoover treat cross-dressing people and gay people and other people the way he did? Why is that the case? You know, why is there this disconnect? And so we tend to use those myths as springboards to get into the bigger issues. Historical issues.
Interesting.
And when I hope it's interesting. We have some great history professors on. Pittsburgh's very, very fortunate. We've got a professor named Philip Nash from Penn State New Kensington. We've got John Hammond from Penn State. Penn State Shenango. John Hammond from Penn State New Kensington. Marcus Rediker from Pitt. It's just a great group of people. Lisa Tatro from CMU.
Do you explore why some of these myths even got started? Like, what even brought about the whole cross-dressing thing in the first place?
That was a joke that a society dame, whose name I've forgotten now, told at a party and said, oh, he's so uptight, he probably is a secret cross-dresser. They didn't use the word cross-dresser back then. Again, I forgot. That was the very first show we did, so it's been a while.
Okay.
But she said something like, oh, you know, he's so uptight and so... and he doesn't really have girlfriends, so he's probably a secret cross-dresser. Ha, 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 ha. But then it just gets around. They told two friends and so on and so on and so on.
Right.
And then it becomes solidified as fact.
Okay.
So people just, it's urban legends from the past.
Yeah, next thing you know, he's wearing a corset or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Or at least that's the
And I think in that movie where Leonardo DiCaprio plays him, the very final scene as a sort of like peeking at a... had some negligees in his closet. But again, there's no evidence that this is true.
All right, so we have you on to talk about myths regarding Thanksgiving.
Yes.
When you do, when it comes to things like this, whether mm-hmm. it's this particular holiday or other holidays, other things that may be of greater significance, sure, you're just a buzzkill
yeah.
about having some fun about a cross-dressing president
mm-hmm.
or one who was told that he was. But this can have much more meaning to people.
Oh, much more, much more. First of all, Thanksgiving, I think, is by far our most popular holiday. So busting myths about turkey being served by the pilgrims and things like that doesn't get me invited to many parties. But particularly when you talk about relations with Native Americans and things like that, then you mm-hmm. then it becomes quite serious.
Right. And then if you go on to holidays like Christmas and you're telling the truth about different aspects of the celebration and its history and how it got started and all those kind of things. There are a lot of people that, my guess is, just do not want to hear those things.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, though. There's something about Thanksgiving that when I tell people these myths and when I tell people how Thanksgiving developed the way we know it now,
mm-hmm.
they don't seem to get too upset.
Okay.
There are kind of good reasons for that. And I think it's possibly because Thanksgiving... there have been days of Thanksgiving forever in European history. So, if your village is saved from a flood, the local cleric will stay up and say, okay, next Wednesday we're going to have a special mass of Thanksgiving because we're saved from this flood or storm or shipwreck or any kind of thing. And so that's why throughout the 1600s and 1700s and the first half of the 1800s, Thanksgiving, you might say, was with a lowercase t. It was a very common thing to do, have a Thanksgiving for something. The War of 1812 there was a Thanksgiving celebration after that, a celebration, observance after that. George Washington had Thanksgiving proclamations a few times in his presidency because of various events. So
mm-hmm.
it's Thanksgivings were very common. It's just they weren't necessarily nailed down to a specific date, and with the turkey and the Norman Rockwell painting and all that sort of stuff until much later.
Well, let's go over some of these if we could.
Okay.
What to you is like, where is the right place to start in going through some of the myths of Thanksgiving?
Well, the best place to start is the place where the traditional story starts, which is in 1621, when the pilgrims and the Native Americans sit down and have a Thanksgiving after a relatively difficult couple of years harvest-wise. And then they have a very abundant harvest in 1621. Have a Thanksgiving. It's a three-day feast. The Native Americans weren't necessarily invited, but there was a lot of cross-communication between the groups. This is in Massachusetts. And they show up, and they show up with venison and other things. And so it's a sort of cross-cultural event. I don't want to oversimplify it because that covers up the difficult parts of the Native American pilgrim relationship. But it was a big deal at the time in 1621. But then there wasn't one in 1622 because the harvest was just normal. There was another big harvest that followed a drought in 1623, so there's another Thanksgiving. This is kind of the pattern, you see. There's a Thanksgiving for a specific reason of something that recently happened.
Okay.
It isn't necessarily an annual thing every year.
Gotcha.
Right? So that's the biggest myth. And what happens is when public schools become a thing in the late 19th century, early 20th century, and they have to produce American history books, those history authors look for stories for the kids. So Thanksgiving becomes a story, and they turn it into one. And they make Thanksgiving sound as if It started in 1621, and we've been celebrating it ever since.
You're right.
In the same way they did the George Washington chopping down the cherry tree as a way of American honesty and virtue. And that's also a myth.
So, but here's the thing that gets me, though. When it comes to schools,
yeah,
why do you think it's important, or was at least important, to when you're going to school and you're supposed to be learning about things that actually occurred in history, why it was important for teachers to come up with a story that would convey something that really wasn't true in the first place? And well, they knew it not to be true.
Well, that's the problem. They knew it not to be true is a little bit of an overstatement. This the Pilgrim story had been around for a long time.
Okay.
And of course there had been Thanksgivings for a long time. But more importantly, when the public schools become sort of regular and institutionalized and become sort of big deals, that's at long after the Civil War. And it's really the Civil War where Thanksgiving starts. So it's almost as if, okay, now we can connect the Civil War Thanksgiving observances back to the Pilgrims. So it's, I'm not saying that they sat around on the committee and said, ah, ha, ha, we have to come up with a good Pilgrim and Native American story. They didn't. It's something that they believed happened, but it was sort of, you know, in the dim past. There were records of that 1621 yes. feast.
Did so. We make connections in our own minds that weren't there, that weren't necessarily, and I mean we as the societal culturally we. Did we make those connections because there may have been this feast, or there was this feast going all the way back to 1621, that we then drew the conclusions that every year there was something like that?
Well, yes, although it's instituted more specifically every year in the 20th century. So that seems to be the point at which people say, oh, well, we've been doing this forever, even though they haven't been doing it for very long. So there's an intensification of having Thanksgiving every November from 1863 onwards.
Mm-hmm.
But then it really becomes a big deal in 1939, when FDR proclaims that Thanksgiving had always been, between the Civil War and 1939, the last Thursday in November. Well, a guy named Fred Lazarus, who was the head of Macy's, went to FDR's administration and said, look, guys, you know, this is the economy is still in rough shape in the Depression. We need to boost. We want Thanksgiving had also become the start of the holiday shopping season by then.
Okay.
Let's boost Christmas shopping, make it a week longer by making Thanksgiving a week earlier. So FDR is sitting down and saying, well, you know, this is a serious problem. We need more spending. So he decides that the next to last Thursday of every November will be Thanksgiving. And so it's partly the guy from Macy's convincing FDR, and partly FDR's commerce secretary and all these other important people in the cabinet, saying, yes, this is a good idea to boost the economy. Now, it wasn't taken as it wasn't swallowed as whole as FDR might have liked to have swallowed it. Some people were upset that it was moved, but I can explain that one. I'm guessing we're pushing up against a commercial.
Yeah, let's pause here for a moment. We'll come back with more. We are speaking once again with Professor Buzzkill. Joseph Cruhill is his name. He's a historian for the public. You can find out more on his website, ProfessorBuzzkill.com. More on the myths of Thanksgiving coming up next on KDK Radio.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Angino, with me, Professor Buzzkill, Joseph Cruhill. He's a historian for the public. He's also a host of his own podcast. The website, ProfessorBuzzkill.com, is where you can go and find out more. And you were just saying before we went to the news, I went to the break there, about how you have Lazarus get together with Roosevelt. Can mm-hmm. we make this thing work for more shopping? And then I just happened to remember that, oh, wait a second. This isn't the third Thursday.
Yeah.
It's actually the last Thursday of the month. So, but and then there was another twist that came
right
after 1939. Explain that.
You see, there are sometimes five Thursdays in November. And so Abraham Lincoln, back in 1863, when he was asked by a woman named Sarah Josepha Hale, who had been writing to presidents since 1849, please let's have a national annual Thanksgiving at the end of November every year. Lincoln responded positively to that because the Gettysburg, the Civil War had taken a turn for positive, and he felt the country needed to live. So he established Thanksgiving as the last Thursday in November every year.
Okay.
And it was more or less followed by that, was not followed by the South for the longest time, which you can imagine. But then getting up into 1939, Macy's goes to FDR, says we have this retail problem, blah, blah, blah. FDR says, okay, I'll make it the fourth, rather than the fifth Thursday, which there were five in 1939, let's move it back to the fourth Thursday, and I'll proclaim that it's the fourth Thursday every year from now on. Okay? So because sometimes there are four, sometimes there are five. Well, the Republicans in Congress, remember FDR was a Democrat, Republicans in Congress, hit the roof. This was tinkering by moving it from the last Thursday in November. This was tinkering with Lincoln's legacy. Lincoln, of course, is the founder of the Republican Party.
Right.
You can't mess with something like this. So they called this new Thanksgiving, the fourth Thursday of November, they called it Franksgiving after Franklin D. Roosevelt. Right. This is how hilarious.
Oh my goodness, the things that they were fighting over.
Oh yeah. Oh, well, crazy, crazy, crazy. And they didn't even buy the argument that, you know, we're trying to boost the economy here. And so they also called it Democratic Thanksgiving. So they held their own Thanksgiving on the last Thursday of that month of that year, which was the 30th. So there were two Thanksgivings that year, a Franksgiving / Democratic Thanksgiving and then a Republican one. And they fought over it in 1941 as well. And finally, Congress got together and actually passed a law in 1942 that established the fourth Thursday of November as Thanksgiving from then on. And that stuck.
And
so it doesn't matter how many Thursdays there are in November now, it's always the fourth one.
Gotcha. What else would you say would be a top myth when it comes to Thanksgiving?
Well, of course, there's the big myth about turkey. The Pilgrims probably had turkey way back in 1621, and turkey was probably served at various times in colonial America and the early Republic. It wasn't rare, right?
Okay.
But venison was much, much, much more common. Venison, deer were everywhere, of course, around the Northeast. We know that very well from this area.
Mm-hmm.
And the Native Americans brought venison to the first Thanksgiving in 1621, and so it was much more common to have venison. Turkey doesn't become more popular until the turkey business starts to crank up in the 20s and 30s. It's seen during the Depression, chicken is seen as, it becomes to be seen as sort of like the poor person's meat. Turkey is richer. It's for rich because it is more expensive. And so poultry farmers realize there's an opportunity here. We can make more money if we grow more turkeys and grow them a lot bigger. And if we market them, it's really, this is the fancy stuff. And so that's one of the reasons it gets solidified as the meat for turkey, for Thanksgiving.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there, well, as I say in our show about this, and as I've said in other radio shows, you know, there are all kinds of people creating Thanksgiving. There are the Pilgrims, Native Americans. George Washington has several proclamations. There are proclamations throughout the 19th century. Sarah Josepha Hale, as I say, very famous person, very important person. Lincoln, FDR, Fred Lazarus from Macy's, the Republicans fighting over it, and this and that, the turkey pardoning sort of being invented in the late 80s. There are a lot of cooks involved in creating Thanksgiving.
Right.
As a tradition.
And you got to wonder, does it stay, do you see it staying like this, or do you see the potential of more evolutions, if you will, that will take place, more adjustments and alterations as time goes by? Just as a historian looking back, what does that give you the ability to look forward and see?
Like, will someone please stop with the green bean casserole thing?
Yeah, that would be nice.
I don't see it changing in terms of date.
Okay.
Because it's so popular in this country. I can't imagine any, apart from what we need to talk about generally in the culture, Native American history, apart from that, it's not controversial. Everyone likes Thanksgiving. Everyone mm-hmm. loves. Every time I've had foreigners come to my house or people from other countries come to visit in America, and they have Thanksgiving, they say, this is fantastic. You don't have to go out and buy a bunch of gifts. Everyone just sits around with family.
Yes.
And that's fun. Has a big meal. It reminds them of the harvest supper tradition in the fall in England and other places.
Okay.
So there's nothing not to like about it, as long as we remember that, as long as we remember that a lot of the stories are mythological.
Yeah.
So I don't see it changing.
Yeah, I am definitely with you, because it is that, I think you're absolutely right about that idea of it doesn't make a difference what your culture is and where you migrate from. The idea of coming in and absorbing into Thanksgiving is just a natural thing.
And once the NFL gets a hold of it and puts a game on Thanksgiving, then we're done. Yeah.
Once again, joining us in studio, Joseph Kruhill, historian for the public, and he is Professor Buzzkill. You can find out more about him at ProfessorBuzzkill.com. Professor, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
News headlines coming up on KDK Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.